Concerning art. Beethoven's relation to art might almost be described as personal. Art was his goddess to whom he made petition, to whom he rendered thanks, whom he defended. He praised her as his savior in times of despair. By his own confession, it was only the prospect of her comforts that prevented him from laying violent hands on himself. Read his words and you shall find that it was his art that was his companion in his wanderings through field and forest, the sharer of the solitude to which his deafness condemned him. The concepts nature and art were intimately bound up in his mind. His lofty and idealistic conception of art led him to proclaim the purity of his goddess with the hot zeal of a priestly fanatic. Every form of pseudo or bastard art stirred him with hatred to the bottom of his soul, hence his furious onslaughts on mere virtuosity and all efforts from influential sources to utilize art for other than purely artistic purposes. And his art rewarded his devotion richly, she made his sorrowful life worth living with gifts of purest joy. To Beethoven, music was not only a manifestation of the beautiful, an art, it was akin to religion. He felt himself to be a prophet, a seer. All the misanthropy engendered by his unhappy relations with mankind could not shake his devotion to this ideal which had sprung into Beethoven from truest artistic apprehension and been nurtured by enforced introspection and philosophic reflection. 1. 'Tis said, that art is long, and life but fleeting, nay, life is long, and brief the span of art, if e'er her breath vouchsafes with gods a meeting, a moment's favor 'tis of which we've had a part. 2. The world is a king, and, like a king, desires flattery in return for favor. But true art is selfish and perverse, it will not submit to the mold of flattery. Conversation Book, March, 1820. When Baron Van Braun expressed the opinion that the opera Fidelio would eventually win the enthusiasm of the upper tiers, Beethoven said, "I do not write for the galleries." He never permitted himself to be persuaded to make concessions to the taste of the masses. 3. Continue to translate yourself to the heaven of art, there is no more undisturbed, unmixed, purer happiness than may thus be attained. August 19, 1817, to Xavier Schneider, who vainly sought instruction from Beethoven in 1811, though he was pleasantly received. 4. Go on, do not practice art alone but penetrate to her heart, she deserves it, for art and science only can raise man to godhood. Teplitz, July 17, 1812, to his 10 years old admirer, Emily M. In H. 5. True art is imperishable and the true artist finds profound delight in grand productions of genius. March 15, 1823, to Cherubini, to whom he also wrote, I prize your works more than all others written for the stage. The letter asked Cherubini to interest himself in obtaining a subscription from King Louis XVIII for the solemn Mass in D. Cherubini declared that he had never received the letter. That it was not only the hope of obtaining a favor which prompted Beethoven to express so high an admiration for Cherubini, is plain from a remark made by the English musician Cipriani Potter to A. W. Thayer in 1861. I found it in Thayer's notebooks which were placed in my hands for examination after his death. One day Potter asked, who is the greatest living composer, yourself excepted? Beethoven seemed puzzled for a moment, and then exclaimed, Cherubini. H. E. K. 6. Truth exists for the wise, beauty for the susceptible heart. They belong together or are complementary. Written in the autograph book of his friend, Lenz von Breuning, in 1797. 7. When I open my eyes, a sign voluntarily escapes me, for all that I see runs counter to my religion, perforce I despise the world which does not intuitively feel that music is a higher revelation than all wisdom and philosophy. Remark made to Bettina von Arnim, in 1810, concerning Viennese society. Report in a letter by Bettina to Goethe on May 28, 1810. 8. Art. Who comprehends her? With whom can one consult concerning this great goddess? August 11, 1810, to Bettina von Arnim. 9. In the country I know no lovelier delight than quartet music. To Archduke Rudolf, in a letter addressed to Baden on July 24, 1813. 10. Nothing but art, cut to form like old-fashioned hoop skirts. I never feel entirely well except when I am among scenes of unspoiled nature. September 24, 1826, to Breuning, while promenading with Breuning's family in the Schönbrunner garden, after calling attention to the alleys of trees trimmed like walls, in the French manner. 11. Nature knows no quiescence, and true art walks with her hand in hand, her sister from whom heaven forfend us. Is called artificiality. From Notes in the Lesson Book of Archduke Rudolf, following some remarks on the expansion of the expressive capacity of music. Love of nature. Beethoven was a true son of the Rhine and his love for nature. As a boy he had taken extended trips, sometimes occupying days, with his father through the Rhenish localities everlastingly dear to me. In his days of physical health nature was his instructress in art, I may not come without my banner, he used to say when he set out upon his wanderings even in his latest years, and never without his notebooks. In the scenes of nature he found his marvelous motives and themes, brook, birds and tree sang to him. In a few special cases he has himself recorded the fact. But when he was excluded more and more from communion with his fellow men because of his increasing deafness, until, finally, he could communicate only by writing with others, hence the conversation books, which will be cited often in this little volume, he fled for refuge to nature. Out in the woods he again became naively happy, to him the woods were a holy of holies, a home of the mysteries. Forest and mountain vale heard his sighs, there he unburdened his heavy-laden heart. When his friends need comfort he recommends a retreat to nature. Nearly every summer he leaves hot and dusty Vienna and seeks a quiet spot in the beautiful neighborhood. To call a retired and reposeful a little spot his own is his burning desire. 12. On the Kahlenberg, 1812, end of September. Almighty One in the woods I am blessed. Happy everyone in the woods. Every tree speaks through thee. O God! What glory in the woodland! On the heights is peace, dash peace to serve him. This poetic exclamation, accompanied by a few notes, is on a page of music paper owned by Joseph Joachim. 13. How happy I am to be able to wander among bushes and herbs, under trees and over rocks, no man can love the country as I love it. Woods, trees and rocks send back the echo that man desires. To Baroness von Drostek. 14. O God! Send your glance into beautiful nature and comfort your moody thoughts touching that which must be. To the immortal beloved, July 6th, in the morning. Thayer has spoiled the story so long believed, and still spooking in the books of careless writers, that the immortal beloved was the Countess Giulietta Ghicciardi, to whom the C-sharp minor sonata is dedicated. The real person to whom the love letters were addressed was the Countess Brunswick to whom Beethoven was engaged to be married when he composed the Fourth Symphony. H. E. K. 15. My miserable hearing does not trouble me here. In the country it seems as if every tree said to me, Holy! Holy! Who can give complete expression to the ecstasy of the woods? Oh, the sweet stillness of the woods! July, 1814, he had gone to Baden after the benefit performance of Fidelio. 16. My fatherland, the beautiful locality in which I saw the light of the world, appears before me vividly and just as beautiful as when I left you. I shall count it the happiest experience of my life when I shall again be able to see you, and greet our father Rhine. Vienna, June 29th, to Wurgler, in Bonn. In 1825 Beethoven said to his pupil Ries, farewell in the Rhine country which is ever dear to me, and in 1826 wrote to Schott, the publisher and my aunts, about the Rhine country which I so long to see again. 17. Brühl, at the Lamm how lovely to see my native country again. Diary, 1812-1818. 18. A little house here, so small as to yield oneself a little room, only a few days in this divine Brühl. Longing or desire, emancipation or fulfillment. Written in 1816 in Brühl near modeling among the sketches for the scherzo of the pianoforte sonata opus 10. 19. When you reach the old ruins, think that Beethoven often paused there, if you wander through the mysterious fir forests, think that. Beethoven often poetized, or, as is said, composed there. In the fall of 1817, to Madame Streicher, who is at a cure in Baden. 20. Nature is a glorious school for the heart. It is well, I shall be a scholar in this school and bring an eager heart to her instruction. Here I shall learn wisdom, the only wisdom that is free from disgust, here I shall learn to know God and find a foretaste of heaven in his knowledge. Among these occupations my earthly days shall flow peacefully along until I am accepted into that world where I shall no longer be a student, but a knower of wisdom. Copied into his diary, in 1818, from Sturm's Betrachtungen über die Werke Gottes in der Natur. 21. Soon autumn will be here. Then I wish to be like unto a fruitful tree which pours rich stores of fruit into our laps. But in the winter of existence, when I shall be gray and sated with life, I desire for myself the good fortune that my repose be as honorable and beneficent as the repose of nature in the winter time. copied from the same work of Sturm's, concerning texts. Not even a Beethoven was spared the tormenting question of texts for composition. It is fortunate for posterity that he did not exhaust his energies in setting an efficient libretti, that he did not believe that good music would suffice to command success in spite of bad texts. The majority of his works belong to the field of purely instrumental music. Beethoven often gave expression to the belief that words were a less capable medium of proclamation for feelings than music. Nevertheless, it may be observed that he looked upon an opera, or lyric drama, as the crowning work of his life. He was in communication with the best poets of his time concerning opera texts. A letter of his on the subject was found in the blood-spotted pocketbook of Theodor Kommer. The conclusion of his creative labors was to be a setting of Goethe's Faust, except Fidelio, however, he gave us no opera. His songs are not many, although he sought carefully for appropriate texts. Unhappily, the gift of poetry was not vouchsafed him. 22. Always the same old story, the Germans cannot put together a good libretto. To C. M. von Weber, concerning the book of Euryanthe, at Baden, in October, 1823. Mozart said, "Verses are the most indispensable thing for music, but rhymes, for the sake of rhymes, the most injurious. Those who go to work so pedantically will assuredly come to grief, along with the music." 23. It is difficult to find a good poem. Grillparzer has promised to write one for me, indeed, he has already written one, but we cannot understand each other. I want something entirely different than he. In the spring of 1825, to Ludwig Rellstab, who was intending to write an opera book for Beethoven. It may not be amiss to recall the fact that Mozart examined over 100 librettos, according to his own statement, before he decided to compose The Marriage of Figaro. 24. It is the duty of every composer to be familiar with all poets, old and new, and himself choose the best and most fitting for his purposes. In a recommendation of Candler's anthology. 25. The genre would give me little concern provided the subject were attractive to me. It must be such that I can go to work on it with love and ardor. I could not compose operas like Don Juan and Figaro, toward them I feel too great a repugnance. I could never have chosen such subjects, they are too frivolous. In the spring of 1825, to Ludwig Rellstab. 26. I need a text which stimulates me, it must be something moral, uplifting. Texts such as Mozart composed I should never have been able to set to music. I could never have got myself into a mood for licentious texts. I have received many librettos, but, as I have said, none that met my wishes. To young Gerhard von Brunning. 27. I know the text is extremely bad, but after one has conceived an entity out of even a bad text, it is difficult to make changes in details without disturbing the unity. If it is a single word, on which occasionally great weight is laid, it must be permitted to stand. He is a bad author who cannot, or will not try to make something as good as possible. If this is not the case, petty changes will certainly not improve the whole. Teplitz, August 23, 1811, to Hartel, the publisher, who wanted some changes made in the hook of the Mount of Olives. 28. Good heavens! Do they think in Saxony that the words make good music? If an inappropriate word can spoil the music, which is true, then we ought to be glad when we find that words and music are one and not try to improve matters even if the verbal expression is commonplace Dixie. January 28, to Gottfried Hartel, who had undertaken to make changes in the book of the Mount of Olives despite the prohibition of Beethoven. 29. Goethe's poems exert a great power over me not only because of their contents but also because of their rhythms. I am stimulated to compose by this language, which builds itself up to higher orders as if through spiritual agencies, and bears in itself the secret of harmonies. Reported as an expression of Beethoven's by Bettina von Arnim to Goethe. 30. Schiller's poems are difficult to set to music. The composer must be able to rise far above the poet. Who can do that in the case of Schiller? In this respect Goethe is much easier. 1809, after Beethoven had made his experiences with the hymn to Joy in Egmont on composing. Weizsäcker's not infrequently accused Beethoven of want of regularity in his compositions. In various ways and at divers times he gave vigorous utterance to his opinions of such pedantry. He was not the most tractable of pupils, especially in Vienna, where, although he was highly praised as a player, he took lessons in counterpoint from Albrecht Schweitzer. He did not endure long with Papa Haydn. He detested the study of fugue in particular. The fugue was to him a symbol of narrow coercion which choked all emotion. Mere formal beauty, moreover, was nothing to him. Over and over again he emphasizes soul, feeling, direct and immediate life, as the first necessity of an artwork. It is therefore not strange that under certain circumstances he ignored conventional forms in sonata and symphony. An irrepressible impulse toward freedom is the most prominent peculiarity of the man and artist Beethoven. Nearly all of his observations, no matter what their subject, radiate the word liberty. In his remarks about composing, there is a complete exposition of his method of work. 31. As regards me, great heavens! My dominion is in the air, the tones whirl like the wind, and often there is a like whirl in my soul. February 13, 1814, to Count Brunswick, in Buda. 32. Then the loveliest themes slipped out of your eyes into my heart, themes which shall only then delight the world when Beethoven conducts no longer. August 15, 1812, to Bettina von Arnim. 33. I always have a picture in my mind when composing, and follow its lines. In 1815, to Neat, while promenading with him in Baden and talking about the Pastoral Symphony. Ries relates, while composing, Beethoven frequently thought of an object, although he often laughed at musical delineation and scolded about petty things of the sort. In this respect, the creation and the seasons were many times abut, though without depreciation of Haydn's loftier merits. Haydn's choruses and other works were loudly praised by Beethoven. 34. The texts which he sent me are least of all fitted for song. The description of a picture belongs to the field of painting. In this the poet can count himself more fortunate than my muse, for his territory is not so restricted as mine in this respect, though mine, on the other hand, extends into other regions, and my dominion is not easily reached. Neusdorf, July 15, 1817, to Wilhelm Gerhard, who had sent him some anacreontic songs for composition. 35. Carried too far, all delineation in instrumental music loses in efficiency. A remark in the sketches for the Pastoral Symphony, preserved in the Royal Library in Berlin. Mozart said, "Even in the most terrifying moments, music must never offend the ear." 36. Yes, yes, then they are amazed and put their heads together because they never found it in any book on thorough bass. To Ries, when the critics accused him of making grammatical blunders in music. 37. No devil can compel me to write only cadences of such a kind. From notes written in his years of study. Beethoven called the composition of fugues the art of making musical skeletons. 38. Good singing was my guide, I strove to write as flowingly as possible and trusted in my ability to justify myself before the judgment seat of sound reason and pure taste. From notes in the instruction book of Archduke Rudolf. 39. Does he believe that I think of a wretched fiddle when the spirit speaks to me? To his friend, the admirable violinist Schuppanzigh, when the latter complained of the difficulty of a passage in one of his works. Beethoven here addresses his friend in the third person, which is the customary style of address for the German nobility and others towards inferiors in rank. H. E. K. 40. The Scotch songs show how unconstrainedly irregular melodies can be treated with the help of harmony. Diary, 1812-1818. Since 1809 Beethoven had arranged folk songs for Thomson of Edinburgh. 41. To write true church music, look through the old monkish chorals, etc., also the most correct translations of the periods, and perfect prosody in the Catholic psalms and hymns generally. Diary, 1818. 42. Many assert that every minor piece must end in the minor. Nego. On the contrary, I find that in the soft scales the major third at the close has a glorious and uncommonly quieting effect. Joy follows sorrow, sunshine rain. It affects me as if I were looking up to the silvery glistering of the evening star. From Archduke Rudolf's Book of Instruction. 43. Rigorists, and devotees of antiquity, relegate the perfect fourth to the list of dissonances. Tastes differ. To my ear it gives not the least offense combined with other tones. From Archduke Rudolf's